Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling, Dialect's Bristol's first podcast, set up in 2001 with a Millennium Grant from the Scarman Trust. We're on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. That's bcfmradio.com/dialect. This week, the School of Activism over the Easter holidays from Wednesday the 3rd to Monday the 22nd of April. Use the arts and learn how to enjoy the revolution. It's organised by the People's Republic of Stokes Croft. And Paul Hazelden, he's the Bristol Multi-Faith Forum's engagement worker, and he looks at the similarities and the differences between the faith groups in the city. Dialect's produced by volunteers. We're online at dialectradio.co.uk and based at the People's Republic of Stokes Croft Arts Centre on Jamaica Street. If you have someone you'd like us to interview or would like to volunteer, have a pen ready at the end of the show.
My name's Lisa Furness and I work for the People's Republic of Stokes Croft as the events, venue and education manager there. I'm actually also a director of People's Republic now.
So is this a political party? The People's Republic?
The People's Republic of Stokes Croft is an arts and political organisation, I guess, really based in the, kind of founded in the area of Stokes Croft and interested in sort of different ways of creating voice and empowerment for the marginalised people there and also making the neighbourhood as beautiful and fun to live in as possible and really getting local people involved in the process of changing their own neighbourhood.
I think maybe people may have seen some of the work that PRSC has done as they go through the bear pit, as many people do, coming to the bus station, coming from shopping centre, that sort of thing. But the art displays that were there for several years aren't anymore. I mean, it's just a sort of permanent exhibition of some sort, and I understand that the council don't want you there anymore.
Yeah, that's right. So the council have taken away the license from the People's Republic and from the Bear Pit Improvement Group, who were managing the Bear Pit to turn it into a outdoor gallery and also a community action zone. That was all taken away about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago. And last autumn, actually, without anybody noticing or as far as we can tell, any consultations happening, the Bear Pit was actually moved out of Stokes Croft and the Central Ward and into the permit of the Broadmead District, the Business Improvement District, which means that actually now there's a whole different group of people who have the rights to issue licences, to run it, to manage it, and all of that was done without any real public discussion.
Okay, so that is, so now the people in charge are not Stokes Croft people or Ashley Ward people or St Paul's people, they are now Broadmead people.
The Broadmead people, yeah. Those are the people who now have the right to decide what happens to the
Bear Pit. They are private policing, that sort of thing around Broadmead.
Yeah, I think we've all walked through Broadmead. We're aware that the main focus is on retail business and making sure that no one's sleeping in the streets, drinking in the streets, making a mess. There's cameras everywhere. I used to walk through Broadmead in the middle of the night on my way home from being a nightclub photographer. And quite often I'd get paid for it with a couple of beers because the DJs couldn't afford to actually pay me. And the voice would come over the tannoy if I walked through Broadmead saying, "Put your beer down. This is a no street drinking zone," because they're actually watching you. And they just, so those are the people that now have control over the future.
So you've got a bit of a battle even to find places to get the artwork out in public space where people will see it as they walk around during the day. What about your activism school? Because I know over the Easter holidays, school holidays, you're doing quite a lot in order to sort of try to reach out to the community around this outward area and say, well, get involved, get creative.
Yeah, so I think actually what's happened at the Bear Pit is a really good example of the value of these kind of workshops. What's happened at the Bear Pit is that initially the People's Republic and Bear Pit Improvement Group were just sent a letter from the council saying, remove all your stuff from the Bear Pit by the end of January or we're going to take you to court.
Now, so what did you have there?
So we've got the bus, a large number of container units that were built to facilitate a market, all of the infrastructure that you've seen there was built by volunteers using public money or PRSC money for the use by the public. So we were basically told at our own expense and before the end of January, so over the middle of winter, we were legally obliged to remove all of that stuff. Now, because there are people within the Bear Pit Improvement Group and within PRSC who have some understanding of how, like, what our rights are and what the political system is, we were able to launch a petition which forced the council to have a full council debate about the issue, and which then led to enough negative press, I believe that must have been how it was, that we've now been invited into mediation. So instead of being taken to court for being 2 months behind our, like, legal requirement to remove everything at our own cost, we're about to enter into a meeting where we could maybe convince the council that if they want to kick us out, they should at least financially help us remove the things that we put there as part of a council mandated operation.
So what are the council planning for the Bear Pit?
I don't know. So currently the plan is for something called the Circle. I mean, really, you'd have to have a look online. If you just Google Circle
Bear Pit, I've seen a plan.
You can see
the plans.
I've
seen a visual plan.
Yeah.
But I don't know, does the council have any specific time that this is going
to
happen?
Good luck trying to get that information.
No, I've not found any information. But look, at the same time, we must remember that there's been a lot of accusations of antisocial behaviour, including drug taking, people shooting up in the Bear Pit. And that's one of the reasons the council are saying that they want you out.
Yeah, except that once again, we have to remember that the licence was taken from us quite a long time ago. There are obviously issues of antisocial behaviour in the Bear Pit. But you can see that there has been a rise in homelessness across the whole country, that there's a reduction in police numbers, that there's like the spice epidemic. We live in a neighbourhood that already experiences a huge amount of drug, homeless and other social issues. And what the People's Republic is interested in is finding ways that we can work with people who are otherwise going to be marginalised to bring them into the conversation about how we control our neighbourhood and change our neighbourhood, instead of just denoting a certain number of people as just undesirable and figuring out our policies around how to drive them out of the neighbourhood, which I think is a lot more what will happen now with the Circle plan and with the Broadmead Improvement Group.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't seem to have improved the situation in the Bear Pit, getting rid of the Bear Pit Improvement Group. Anyway, let's get back to the Easter holidays. What are you up to?
Yeah, okay, so the Easter holidays, we have a 2.5-week programme coming together, which is called the School of Activism. The main reason why we put this together is because I think everybody at the moment, well, with climate change, Brexit, austerity, whatever the other things are that you're hearing about on the news, is used to feeling depressed, frustrated and powerless in the face of the things that are happening locally, nationally and internationally. And what we wanted to do was to put together a series of workshops that give people some tools to how they could respond to these problems if they want to. Now, we don't, this is not going to be 2 weeks of how to take over the, like, the government, but there will be. So we've got workshops on documentary making, on how to be involved in PRSC radio, screen printing, zine making. We've also got a workshop from Extinction Rebellion teaching teens. It's called Know Your Rights, and it's actually about what your legal rights are. If you do get stopped, if you're involved in a protest. We've also got the Cable are going to be running a workshop for people about internet privacy, teaching you how to protect
So that's
yourself.
A local newspaper which is based at the People's Republic of Stoke Scroll.
Yeah, the Cable is Bristol's only media, what's it called?
Cooperative.
Community-owned, yeah, that's it, community-owned media cooperative. So they're involved. We've got a whole range of different groups of people coming in. We've got a documentary maker, like award-winning documentary maker, coming in to run a workshop for people about filmmaking, street photography. We're going to be running a little session on flash mobs and projection bombing and how to organise a flash mob.
Okay, what is a flash mob for older listeners?
So a flash mob is when a very large number of people surprise get together in a random place spontaneously in order to either for arts or political purposes to make a point about something and then disperse.
So it sounds to me like you're talking about use of social media to start a revolution.
Yeah, that would be one way of looking at it, which is why we're also doing something about internet privacy, because if you are interested in getting involved in direct action or something, then you also need to be aware of what information you're sharing We've really tried to make it as inclusive as possible and as varied as possible, and interesting without it just being like, fight the man.
Well, this is, and it's also about, this is how to do it. So it's about sharing knowledge too. What about art and politics though? It doesn't seem to be, they almost seem to be two completely different subjects. You don't really seem to see much where the two come together. So what is PRSC's vision for how the two might have something to do with each other?
Well, I would say that art, you know, at its absolute core, art is communication. And, for example, street art, which this neighbourhood is known as, is an incredibly good way for allowing people who otherwise would be completely excluded and voiceless to publicly express how they're feeling. It gives people a platform to express political ideology or frustrations or views that otherwise would be invisible.
But that, a lot of that is angry. A lot of it, people say, well, actually, this is ugly. I don't like the look of this.
Yeah, but what, you know, people who are complaining about what someone's written on the wall are missing the fact that they could just get a paintbrush and paint something better. Like, the idea is that these public spaces do not belong to any individual, that we walk through them and are exposed to them every day, and that actually graffiti is a way in which people take it into their own hands in order to make a mark on their city. And a lot of it is angry, but a lot of people are angry, and a lot of people feel totally unheard, and like they have no outlet for their needs and their views. And for us, graffiti is a very empowering way that people can really express how they're feeling. You know, there's a reason why the phrase "the writing on the wall" is all about, like, witnessing the feelings that are being, you know, emerging from places.
Do you think Bristol is quite a big centre for this? I think they have some sort of a graffiti festival here, don't they?
Yeah, I think Bristol is world famous for the street art that we have here. And the Urban Paint Festival, Upfest, as it's more commonly known, runs in Bedminster every year and is a big citywide sort of celebration of street art. But there's still a real duality in the way that the authorities view street art. You know, it's almost like if we can have all the beautiful murals and all the tourists without having to have all the people who we haven't allocated as artists painting on the walls, then that's a perfect situation, which really ignores where the people who make beautiful murals have learned their trade. And it just means that only people who could afford to go to art school and have a huge house that they could paint in every single day to practice will ever be entitled to colour the city that they live in. So, yeah, that's what the streets are, as far as I'm concerned. They're canvas for people to play on. If you don't like it, then paint it out.
And what do you personally, what do you get out of it?
Out of the existence
of
street art?
Well, yeah, out of helping organise this sort of event and being involved with the People's Republic.
So, as like anyone else, I also regularly feel incredibly depressed and disempowered, and like I'm so angry from all the injustices that go on that I see just on my way to work, that by the time I arrive, I can barely speak. And I think any place where there is a kind of constructive, expressive way of just sharing with people how you're feeling can be really good for that. Like once you've written on the wall, you know, austerity is killing us all, and then 20 other people come past and they add to that message, suddenly you've actually got a movement rather than just one person feeling broken. And for me, that's what this is. This is a real opportunity for us to just get together and share some stories about what's worked and what hasn't worked and try things out and actually just let our frustrations out in a constructive way.
Well, some people might see some of this graffiti as a mess. Sounds like you see Definitely. It more like a collage.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if you walk through neighbourhoods that don't have any tolerance of graffiti, then you have the joy of seeing a lot of blank grey concrete walls. And I think that the human psyche is not designed to be surrounded by grey and concrete and steel. You know, I think actually colour and creativity and vision and artistry and expression are all actually very good for the human soul. And while obviously I don't like every single piece of artwork that I walk around, I love living in a city which has art in it, not just in the galleries, you know. It's art that belongs to everybody. And that's
And the message is, if you don't like what you see, go and do something better.
Yeah.
The best place to check out your programme for the School of Activism is where?
So you can find the full programme of just so many different workshops and activities, most of them free. You can find the full programme at prsc.org.uk. We've got workshops for children aged 8 to 12, workshops for 12 to 15s. We've got workshops for all families and then for everyone age 14 and up. So there really should be something for everybody. And we've worked super hard to make them all as affordable as possible. Most of them are free. So come down and see what's going on.
So the programme is between Wednesday the 3rd and Monday the 22nd of April. Lisa Furness, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
I'm Paul Hazelden, and I'm the engagement worker for the Bristol Multifaith Forum.
Paul, I know, actually, we've spoken to you before on Dialect, where you were working, I think, for the Wild Goose, or at least Crisis Ministries, which is the homeless charity.
Yes.
Can you just tell us if there is any sort of crossover between homelessness and faith communities in the city?
Well, there's a massive crossover. I mean, many of the charities and social groups working to address homelessness and the issues associated with homelessness are faith-based in some way. So, you know, there's a great deal of crossover between the faith communities and the work on homelessness and addiction and mental health.
I mean, before we talk about the multi-faith, yes. I mean, what are the changes you've seen in the state of homelessness in the city, the numbers, that sort of thing?
The numbers are increasing. People's situations are getting more desperate. We are seeing folk coming to the Wild Goose for food, who have got jobs, who would be regarded as being respectable, ordinary members of society, but they just cannot make ends meet. And so this goes along with the increasing use of food banks, the cutbacks to the network of support that the state used to provide. People are struggling far more. They don't have the resources when things go wrong. They've got nothing to fall back on. And the fragmentation in society means they don't have family around, they don't have friends and neighbours who will step in and support. So they're absolutely stuck without mostly the faith groups who are providing the immediate support. And the Trussell Trust food banks are fantastic, but it's an appalling indictment on our society that we need them so much.
Fifth richest country in the world.
Indeed, yes.
Amazing.
And how do we use our riches?
The Wild Goose, then, whereabouts is it for those that maybe want to point someone towards it, that needs a meal in the evening? And what other sort of, and what does the Wild Goose, is that the idea? Is it a free meal? Is that what it's about?
It is, yes, for people who need it. There are a number of other sources of food in Bristol. So the Bristol Homeless Forum, if you go to Bristol, find bristolhf.org.uk, that has points to a fairly complete directory of all the groups working with homeless people providing food and providing other sources of support.
So that's just one place, what's on Stapleton Road.
Yes.
But it's interesting you say, so what is the connection, do you think, between multi-faith and helping the homeless?
One of the primary functions of most faith groups are helping needy, vulnerable people. Yeah, so giving to the poor is one of the good aspects of pretty much every faith.
Okay, so what are the main faiths we've got in Bristol?
Well, obviously, there's the Christian faith, which is the largest. We've got Muslims, who are the next largest, and then we've got a variety of other smaller groups. There's Sikhs, there's Hindus, there's Jews, there's Baha'i. Those are the main ones.
Baha'i, what's that? I've not heard of that one before.
It's the newest world religion, as far as I know. It originated, I believe, in Iran a few centuries ago, and it's very much a modern religion advocating world peace. I mean, all the things they promote are things that you and I would fully endorse.
But are there any real differences between these faiths?
Many people think so, yes, absolutely. What the differences are, I'm not going to get into here and now. But yes, I do believe there are deep differences between the faiths. But there are also many things that we have in common. And I think having a variety of faiths in this country where people can believe radically different things but still live alongside one another and work together and care for one another.
Now, I suppose there'd be some secular people or humanists, yes, who would say, hang on, Paul, you're excluding us.
Well, I'd say humanism is just another faith position as far as I'm concerned. So
is
I'm
it?
Not.
But they're saying that they don't believe in God, humanists.
Not all members of the faith communities believe in God. You know, you don't have to believe in God to be a good Buddhist. So believing in God is not a requirement. Believing in one God, believing in many gods. You know, there's a whole variety of positions out there, and believing in anything I would regard as being a faith position.
But what about the old pagan religions that were here in Britain before Christianity came along? I suppose the modern interpretation of that might look like Wicca or witchcraft or something. Would you include those in the multi-faith spectra?
They would certainly be welcome to join us. If there's any sort of faith community of Wicca or pagans or whatever, then they would be welcome.
What about the Satanists? Because that's another faith, isn't it?
I would not exclude them if people want to come along as Satanists. I must say that I'm speaking here as the engagement worker for the Multifaith Forum. I'm not speaking on behalf of the Multifaith Forum. So other people on the forum may have a different perspective on this.
Because the thing is, people believe an awful lot of different things.
They
do. There's a massive spectrum. How do you actually manage to keep people talking to each other? Because surely they're finding things to disagree about all the time.
Well, here you come to the distinction between the Multifaith Forum and the Interfaith Group. Now, the Interfaith Group is interested in the details of the beliefs and practices of the different religions and want to talk about what they believe and how they differ and what this and that means. The Multifaith Forum isn't really set up for that. What we're here for is to enable the faith communities in Bristol to engage with the wider society. So that means, primarily, of course, the council, but it means all the other structures in society. So the NHS, the police, the social services, major employers. So whenever they want to communicate something with the faith communities or ask questions about the faith communities, then we are the vehicle through which that happens.
Well, there's another quite large faith, which I know is represented in Bristol. That's the Rastafarians. Do you come across them, and are they part of what you do?
They would be very welcome to be part of the forum, but they haven't engaged with us in any formal way as yet.
Now, I know one of the things that you do regularly is this Open Doors Day. So can you just tell us what that's about? And I know you've just had one recently, haven't you?
Absolutely, yes. We've just had the Bristol Diverse Doors Open Day, and we had 15 places of faith that opened their doors to the public on that day.
So is any of those you'd like to highlight that people might not even know exist? I mean, say, for example, is there a Hindu place of worship here in Bristol that people might not have even noticed that is there?
There's a Bristol Hindu temple on Church Road. So that opened its doors to us. We had a mosque, we had a Sikh temple, we had the Baha'i Centre, we had a Christian church. I said the Sikh temple, mosque, and the Progressive Synagogue they were all places that we visited, and then we had a bunch of other places that were open, but we didn't get to visit on these.
You see, the interesting thing is, for most of these places, are quite happy for people to come along just to experience what you would, I suppose, be the equivalent of a Christian church service. You don't have to be part of the faith to sit and enjoy and watch what happens there.
Absolutely, yes. So some of the venues, they had their own services happening. So in the Sikh temple, then we had a service going on, which we were able to sit in on, but the engagement was limited. Other places, we had a talk from the members of the community. Other places, it was much more an interactive session where we were told a little bit and could ask questions and so on. So they varied what they did.
Now, one of the things I'm interested in, Paul, is the link between faiths and health, because some people say it's nonsense. Other people say it's true, that if you're part of a faith, that actually there are ways that can help you get more healthy and even involved healing, this sort of thing. Now, it's something which traditionally in this country, probably up until 50, 100 years ago, people used to, there'd be, for example, if you went to hospital, you might even find a nurse praying for you, but that sort of thing doesn't happen anymore. Do you think there's any link between health and faiths?
Absolutely. There's lots of links between them. And if you go back in time, then a hospital is a place of hospitality that a faith community opened its doors. And you know, because sick people came to receive hospitality, they learned how to care for sick people. And that is where our hospitals came from.
Well, I'm just thinking about the Bristol Royal Infirmary. Yes. I seem to remember that infirmaries used to be attached to monasteries hundreds of years ago.
Absolutely, yes. It's primarily monasteries that had the hospitals that ran them and so on. And that's where our health service originated from.
But do you think it's just wishful thinking to think that, you know, by having people stood around you or people praying for you, you might actually improve in your health?
I have seen many people whose health improved dramatically after prayer. And I have examples of that in my own life. There's a couple of times I could talk about, but we probably don't have time for that right now. But you know, fairly dramatic examples of healing in response to prayer.
Fantastic.
So in my experience and many others.
Well, that's nice to know. There's still some of this going on. What about mental health, though? Because that's become a serious problem right across the country since we've had austerity and since we've seen the closing down of quite a lot of mental health institutions, the cutbacks in the health service provision of mental health. Are you seeing some of that?
Absolutely. And we're working, so the Bristol Multifaith Forum and others are working in partnership with CAS, which is the Community Access Support Service. So they're engaging with a whole bunch of different organisations, but you know, the faith communities are a really important part of that to enable them to provide a good quality mental health care.
But how can faiths help with mental health? Surely if someone's mentally ill, there's not a lot somebody of faith can do to help them.
We're not talking about people of faith being mental health practitioners. We're not talking about diagnosing problems or prescribing medicines. But there's an awful lot that you can do to help somebody who is struggling. And if you can provide a better quality of life, if you can provide emotional security, if you can provide a place where people feel loved and accepted, then all of that helps a person's emotional and mental health. And when they're struggling with areas, then if they're in a better place, then it gives them strength, it helps them to respond, it helps them to heal faster. So there's an awful lot that faith communities and other communities can do to support and promote good mental health.
Well, you know, it also seems to have something to do with what we were talking about earlier, which is you can't make ends meet, then you may crack up. I mean, that happens, it's almost a normal reaction.
Indeed. And you know, a lot of people are suffering from a financial perspective, but an awful lot of the problems that people have with austerity, it's not just the money. It's the emotional problems that go with it. It's the social problems. It's questions about how will people see me? I feel that I've failed. I feel that I've let down my family. It's all the emotional and psychological issues that go along with the debt. So very often, why do people get into debt? It's partly because they don't have enough money, but it's also because they haven't addressed the problems of getting into debt early enough. And why don't people address those problems? It's emotional and psychological issues that are getting in the way, stopping them getting the help they need early enough and making the problem much worse. So there is an awful lot that can be done that doesn't need any great skill or experience, but just does require compassion and love and listening to one another.
What about events that Bristol Multifaith Forum puts on? I know you do a few, don't you?
Yes, well, we have regular forum meetings where people come and you know, we have a speaker or two and we give space for people to engage, ask questions and so on. And we put on a whole bunch of different things. So a little while ago, we had a conference on the on ecology and the environment from a faith perspective. We've done things on...
Well, tell us about that. That's interesting. I mean, Bristol's quite a green city. We like to think of ourselves as eco-friendly, even though apparently our air is a little bit more polluted than it should be.
Absolutely.
What came out of that then? It sounds like a fascinating thing as a topic to get people from all different faiths looking at.
Yes, and one of the hopes from that event was to spark off a more engaged group from the faith communities working on ecology and the environment.
Because it seems like we're making a bit of a mess of it. As a species, aren't we?
We are indeed. And a number of the faith communities have quite a lot to say about the importance of caring for the environment and caring for creation. And there are a significant number of people I know within the Christian community personally, but I'm sure there are in the other faith communities too, who are working as individuals to care for the environment and to address problems of global climate change and so on, biodiversity, pollution, lack of fresh water, decreasing amount of soil, and so on and so forth. And there's an awful lot happening, but it's not associated with the mainstream faith organisations at the moment on the whole. It's happening behind the scenes, but there's an awful lot happening.
How long does faith, Christian faith, I suppose I'm talking about now, go back in Bristol?
Oh, no idea.
We had mainly it was sort of monks and people like that. And I mean, I know I was looking recently at a map of the conduits which brought water into the city centre from the outskirts of the city, all built by monks.
I can believe that. Yes, they were pretty good at providing infrastructure.
Even though Bristol Water were doing some works, and one of the conduits, I think it was St John's Conduit, had been working fine for 750 years. Bristol Water came along and clonk, it's no longer there. That's on St John Street, if you want to go. Right. When I first arrived in Bristol, that was flowing, water was flowing out of there fine.
Yes.
And apparently during the Second World War, people were coming to that one conduit built hundreds of years, 700 years before World War II, to get fresh water because the main supply had been blown up by the German bombers. But anyway, look, so I interrupted you, didn't I? You were talking about events and also your newsletter.
Yes. So we have a monthly newsletter. So and that provides information not just about faith events, but things that people will think will be of relevance and interest to the faith communities. So if anybody's interested in receiving the newsletter, then if they visit our website, which is bristolmultifaithforum.org.uk, there's a fairly obvious links to contact us, and they can sign up on the website there and receive our newsletter. They can also say they're interested in becoming a member of the Multifaith Forum if they want a slightly greater level of engagement. And they can also say that they're interested in the Voice and Influence Partnership, which is a larger group that we're a part of. And that we're working alongside other equalities groups to help to promote what's happening in Bristol, help to disseminate information about what's happening, and enable people whose voices often aren't heard to engage with the decision makers in the city to have their say and to get involved in shaping the decisions that are made by the council and by other folk about the future of our city.
One of the things most people understand a bit about the differences between the Protestants, the Catholics, the nonconformists, you know, the Methodists, the Baptists, that sort of thing. But what about the Muslim and Jewish faiths? Because you've got the Shia and the Sunnis,
yes.
And you've also got, in Judaism, you've got Orthodox Judaism, and you've got, I think it's called Reformed Judaism or something. So can you just talk about those, you know, in the Jewish faith and the Muslim faith, what the differences are, if there is much of a difference?
I'm not really qualified to talk about the differences within the Muslim faith. I know that the fundamental split there goes back to a generation or so after Muhammad, and it's to do with issues about how the leadership was passed on to one person or another, and different theological distinctives.
Well, you know what? The Protestant and the Catholic split was a little bit similar, or the split between the Orthodox Church.
The split with the Orthodox Church. Again, if I say my perspective, and I'm speaking on my own behalf and not on behalf of the Multifaith Forum here, is that it's all to do with power politics and control. So it's got very little to do with the faith itself. It's to do with people who want to have power and who want to use religion to further their own ends.
Okay.
It's my perspective.
Okay, well,
other
about,
people have a different take.
What about Judaism and the two different types that we've got here in the city then, the main types?
Essentially, there is... simplifying horribly, that there's a strand of Judaism that holds to the Old Testament as we know it and sees that as being normative and fixed in time. And then there's the progressive strand of Judaism, which regards the Old Testament as being a really important set of books that God has spoken through and used wonderfully, but is part of a progressive revelation. So God's word, God didn't stop speaking to us and didn't stop revealing things. And so we have to keep up with what he is saying and embrace new things as and when God reveals them.
I mean, we've got the Torah and the Talmud, I know, in Judaism. What are they and what's the difference?
the Torah, the law, and so we have the first five books of the Bible as a really important.
So this is like the Ten Commandments coming down from Mount Sinai.
It includes the Ten Commandments, but it sets the Ten Commandments in the context of the story of God's interaction with a bunch of people. And he interacts with them partly because he chooses them specially, but he chooses them in order for them to be a blessing to the whole world. You know, so that his promise to Abraham is, he chooses Abraham, but the intention is that through Abraham, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. So it is God interacting with specific people, but he's doing so in order that everybody should be better off as a result of it.
It's quite a lot of fighting, isn't there, in the Old Testament? Quite a lot of blood, I'm afraid.
Is that,
do you ever wonder sometimes whether that is putting people in the right direction?
Again, my own take on this, and I'm not speaking as a Jewish scholar at all. I would argue very strongly as a Christian that Jesus came to bring a fresh, clear new revelation that built on the Old Testament but was not constrained by it.
I suppose for the Jews to establish themselves, there had to be a little bit of fighting.
Absolutely.
In order to say, well, actually, sorry, we're not just going to be a pushover. And we're talking about, I don't know, whatever, 2000 BC.
Yes.
They had to establish themselves somehow.
Yes, and it's very interesting. If you look at what the Bible says about warfare, the instructions to the Jewish people about how they conduct their warfare is very, very specific, and they were not allowed to use the latest military technology. So that they weren't allowed to use horses and chariots, for example, which was the advanced technology of the day. They had to go into warfare when it was necessary in a weaker position so that they would know it was God delivering them. It wasn't their own strength and ability.
Crikey.
And that's the principle. So if you want to follow an Old Testament approach to war and justify your war on the basis of the Old Testament, then you can only fight if you go in in a position of weakness and knowing that you are only going to win if God is there and fighting for you.
Wow.
That's, so I'll just throw that out for
that
people who want to.
That takes some faith to do that. Anyway.
That's the accounts that we have.
So what about the Talmud? Because isn't that also, that's also quite an important part of Judaism, isn't it?
It's a very, very important part. Essentially, commentary on the law. So the law is the central truth, the central revelation, as I understand it, and it has to be understood. And the process of understanding what God has said and understanding his will for us as a result is something that we all need to work at. And the Talmud is a really important record of some of the early ways in which people have engaged with the law, God's word as they understand it, and sought to understand what it means, and hence how we should live, how to be good people and build a good, healthy society. And that search is still going on today. But listening to the wisdom of the people who've gone before us, I think, is a very good place to start.
And what do you say to people who say, well, actually, these faiths are very old-fashioned, outmoded, and have got no place in modern society?
I would say that the issues that they address are absolutely modern, 100% contemporary. They're issues of morality, issues of meaning and value and purpose in human life. How do we relate to one another? How do we live a good, authentic, loving life? How do we build a good society that cares for the weak and the poor? How do we get economic success without pushing people to the wall? All those issues are core to all the different faith traditions, and we need to understand how people have answered those questions in the past. The answers may be different today, with the internet and all kinds of things. The details may be different, but the issues we face about human selfishness and greed, about the powerful oppressing the poor, the weak, the rich oppressing the poor, all those issues, they haven't changed in the last 2,000 years or 4,000 years or however long since people have been going. They're with us today. And those are the issues that the different faiths all seek to help us navigate and help us find good answers.
Do you think Bristol's Mayor Marvin Rees takes the contribution of the faith community seriously in the city?
Yes, I think he does. I think he takes everybody's contribution seriously, and I think Marvin has been making space for different groups to contribute in a way that hasn't happened before in the history of our city. And I think that's a really good, healthy development, and I very much hope that after Marvin's time, that will continue. And a lot of faith groups have been involved in setting up a whole bunch of initiatives that the city is benefiting from. So I know there's the church's Winter Night Shelter, for example, is a really good example of the sort of cooperation that's taking place. And there's feeding and programs for schools that is being worked on, and a whole bunch of other things that is happening, partly because the faith groups are interested in doing something, and partly because the city council, through Marvin, is allowing space for these sort of things to happen and this engagement to take place.
And what do you say to people who say, well, actually, most of the conflicts in the world and throughout history have been caused by religion?
I would say that's a very nuanced view of history, that as I said earlier, I read it very much that the people in power seek to use anything they can to remain in power and increase their power and their wealth, and they will use religion just like they'll use anything else. So I think religion has often been used, but if you look at the different conflicts, then the conflict in Northern Ireland, you can say it's Protestant and Catholic. But it's about different social groups with different amounts of political power, and social injustice is the root of the conflict. And it's not about what you believe about the mass or the Pope or anything. The conflict's not about that. It never has been. It's about economics. It's about social groups who are marginalised, and that's where the conflicts are throughout the world. And you can associate the people groups with the religions that they follow, but the religions aren't the root of the problem. And actually, it's the religious people very often who are bridging the gaps, who are working towards unity and working towards peace.
Well, we saw that, did with the Good Friday Agreement, didn't we, in Northern Ireland?
Yes.
So finally, just remind us of where people can find you online and in the real world as well.
Thank you. It's the Bristol Multifaith Forum.org.uk is the website. And you can find us, we're based at Barton Hill Settlement. We've got an office there, but to be honest, it's hardly ever anybody in the office. So it's best online. If you visit the website, there's a phone number there. You can email us, sign up for our newsletter, sign up to the Voice and Influence Partnership, and we'd love to hear from you. And if you've got suggestions about ways that the faith communities can engage more effectively with the city, then let us hear it.
Well, that's all for this week. Dialects Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast. You can download it to listen on your phone or in the car. Subscribe to our email list and listen the week before broadcast if you like at dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guests. That's Lisa Furness from PRSC and also Paul Hazelden from the Bristol Multifaith Forum, and to studio engineers Dave Bazanko and Josh Chivers. Dialects, a Bristol Broadband Co-op production. Catch us on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon, and anyone can contribute. Contact us through the People's Republic of Stokescroft, just off Jamaica Street. They're online at prsc.org.uk. If you have some of your precious time to spare, you can volunteer with us, or for hundreds of opportunities elsewhere in Britain via the national volunteering website, do-it.org. Thanks for listening to Dialect. And I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. I'll be back on Friday with my two-hour BCFM politics show, live from 6 till 8 p.m. Meanwhile, till next Tuesday, midday, from the Dialect crew, goodbye for now.
Leo. Cancer.
Ralph.
Charles. Paul. Larry.
Now I like a woman who loves her freedom, and I like a woman who can hold her own. And if you fit that description, baby, come with me. Take my hand. Come with me, baby, to love land. Let me show you.
And my name is Larry. And I like a woman that loves everything and everybody. Because I love everybody and everything. And you know what, ladies? If you feel that this is you, then this is what I want you to do.